morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel. Very nice to have you with us on this Thursday morning. It is the 25th of July, 14 minutes past 9 o'clock. I'm Joe Donahue. We have a wonderful group of panelists to talk about things, talk about what's going on. It's, you know, like the month that we've had that, you know, oh, by the way, the president of the United States spoke to the nation last night saying he wasn't running for re-election. And it's almost sort of an afterthought because of, you know, obviously we do that, but also just a lot of other stuff going on. But we'll talk about it all today and try to put it into some context. We, of course, welcome you, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. I usually don't do this. I would like to do this, however, today. I don't know.
Don't harsh my mellow.
No. You know, I love our audience very much. And I've noticed something, though, in the last couple of days over all of what's been going on, the back and forth and so forth. And what I've noticed is I made a mistake last night, and I did a deep dive in reading the mail. And like all the letters, not just the ones that we read here, but just all the letters. And there seems to be so much fury from people about things that, like, we're bashing Biden, or we're bashing this person, or we're bashing that person. And I noticed that there seems to be a thing that when we quote something, or we mention something, or this is something that was articulated by this person, or I read from an article, that somehow that means that we are endorsing it. And I didn't think I had to describe what we do here again, but what we do is I throw things out and then we comment on them. And I certainly understand if someone says something and you don't agree with it, that's fine. But it doesn't mean that we all endorse it. It doesn't mean that we all believe it. And by the way, if you have a problem with it, write to us. We'd love to hear you. Not with, you know, to me about how you hate the show and how you hate me, but more about how not how you're never going to give us another dime because we're constantly bashing Biden, but that instead, tell us specifically what you're upset about, and we'll read your letter and we'll kind of go from there. As for the Biden thing, I understand, but we didn't push him out. Like we didn't have a meeting and decide that he wasn't going to run again. I believe, properly reflected the mood of not only voters who told us in poll after poll that it was time to move on, but also those within the Democratic Party. Also, that still isn't an endorsement. That is just a reflection of what they are doing. Does that make sense? Teresa's looking at me like it doesn't make sense.
No. I'm just trying to think about what's the shortest way to say it. Yeah. I mean, I think that there's change is hard, right? And there's always a, you know, churn. Churn is difficult. And but I think in the end, everything works out the way it's supposed to. And I think that President Biden, we'll get into this more, has an extraordinary legacy. And I think he has strengthened the cementing of his legacy by what he did yesterday. And I typically, before the show, as people know who listen, I look up this day in history, like what happened on this day and on national this or that day. And as I was looking at this day in history last night for today, I realized that yesterday will be in this day in history going forward.
Oh, sure.
Yesterday is a day that books will be written about. It will be marked in this day in history. It was really an extraordinary day because of the speech that he gave and because of the change that's happening in the country and because he fulfilled the promise that he made when he ran the last time, which is that he would be a transitional president and open the path for a new generation of leaders. And if you look at his cabinet, if you look at the people who work for him, it's extraordinary. I mean, just go and look. Just look at the faces and the names. The diversity is incredible. The people he surrounded himself with are really amazing. The doors that he's opened for them, the pathways and such. In any case, again, I'm talking too much. But yes, these last couple of weeks have been pretty difficult. But the outcome in the end is all part of the process that led us to an outcome of where we are now. And let's go.
Both Jake Tapper and Stephen Colbert made a very similar point, which is that history books have been written about years and administrations, books all about just 1968 or 1962 or 1964. And to your point that we'll have books written about the first 3 weeks of July.
Absolutely.
2024.
Well, and that's what I was going to add to your I think it's really courageous that you did a deep dive into the letters.
Yeah.
And I also think it's really smart. I mean,
and I'm fat. But go ahead.
Well, that's not nice.
You're on the radio. The fact that people felt comfortable to share those thoughts mean that they do feel a sense of community with this radio station. And we are often, we're constantly saying, write in, share what you think, share what you think. So I think we've all been on such an emotional roller coaster.
That's the rub. I asked for it.
You do. And I think we learn a lot, right? We always learn a lot, right? If we're going to step into the arena, right, then we're going to hear things that are going to be hard to hear. And we learn from that. We learn kind of what the zeitgeist is. You made observations about it. You also learn like where you got to redress the balance and sort of ask folks to think a little bit more behind what they say and how we might have to be more conscientious about saying this is not an endorsement. We're commenting on this. And people, we are dealing with so much emotional baggage from the last like 8 years, honestly. That the fact that people feel comfortable doing it, although let's try not to be rude, kindness, let's go with the kindness movement here. It's so easy to, in writing, we see this on social media. I'm sure you see it on these letters. Yeah. It's so easy to be rude and mean and let out the frustration in a way that feels like there aren't going to be any consequences. But there are human beings on the other end. And you're just a guy who's a radio host who's trying to put some good in the world. So let's have some empathy for everybody, right? The folks that are all of us that are on this emotional roller coaster, and Joe, who's just trying to do his best with what he has in the time we're in.
The voice you just heard is that of Kristen Van Genhoven, theater artist, arts advocate, activist, and executive director for Project Sage in Lakeville, Connecticut. Very nice to have you here on this Thursday morning. Thank you for those nice words. Before that, Teresa Bourgeois, public policy and communications expert. Hello, Teresa.
Hello. Delighted to be here. And it's nice that people care enough to share, even if it's, grumbly.
No, I don't mind the grumbling. I just
they it, shouldn't it, talk
no,
about
well,
you.
No, I don't even care about that. It was just sort of this idea that when we say something that it's an endorsement. People sometimes do that even when I will do a book show and they'll say, you did that. You reviewed that book. No, mm-hmm. I just interviewed the author. That didn't mean I liked it. I mean, maybe I did. Maybe I didn't.
Right.
But, it's different.
Yeah. But, I listen sometimes and just have to keep myself from writing in and like screaming at the radio, but that's because isn't that all part of it to get yourself thinking and engaging and hearing different viewpoints?
Absolutely.
And so on and so forth.
Absolutely. Judy Patrick has been here every day this week, and she's my North Star. She's right there and helping me through all of this. Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association, my calm in the storm. Hello, Judy. How are you?
Good morning. So how I view where I sit and what I'm supposed to be doing here is to offer a clear-eyed view of what's happening and not be a booster for one side or another. I think too often, especially I think liberals, tend to try to put their heads in the sand and not see the problems. And when it comes to Joe Biden, there were problems that we should have been talking about. We bashed Donald Trump for good reason, a lot. But when it came to Joe Biden, I mean, that debate was a disaster, and it was very fine for us to talk about it. And I don't think the audience is going to appreciate what I had to say about his speech last night.
Well,
so, but I would,
let the games begin.
Can I take exception to too often liberals put their head in the sand? I mean, we have a situation with Republicans right now in the leadership who are enabling a person to be the candidate for president of the United States who doesn't believe in the peaceful transfer of power. He objected to it in a legal way after the 2020 election, mm-hmm. until he didn't get his way in the courts. And then he, incited a riot at the Capitol, which I can never not forget. And these Republicans who in that moment, when they're after their lives were in danger, denounced him. Then a few days later, they start going to Mar-a-Lago and he starts threatening them. And all of a sudden, I see nothing. And it's gone on and on and on. They see nothing. So I think you can't say just liberals have their head in the sand. And
often, though. I mean, sometimes you can look at it.
Yeah. No, I'm saying it's not just liberals.
You're doing the whataboutism. Well,
it's not. I'm saying that saying it's liberal.
The other thing, too, though, I have to say, because it's hard not to do this, right? But last night I was listening to the Republican talking points after the speech that the president gave, and the Mitch McConnell.
Right.
Mitch McConnell was saying that this was circumventing democracy, right. that the Democrats named a candidate. Who, by the way, has not yet been chosen by the party, but that'll come. And
in a competitive process.
In 15 million votes that are basically thrown out the door. And then yet most of the party and part of the party platform on the Republican side is that our votes were thrown out in 2020 and Donald Trump truly won that election, even though there is absolutely not a scintilla of proof that that took the case. That seems to be a rich argument for me.
Right. This notion that they're really trying to find their footing, and that is so contradictory to the reality of what's actually happening.
Well, I would say they're all trying to find their footing. I mean, I think the two things we're also talking about here are just political machinations and also our expectations of the media right now. I mean, I think the public is justified in assuming that when they're hearing journalists, reporters, folks on the news, folks in the talk shows, that those are their opinions. I don't know that we have done a critical job of identifying when it's an endorsement and when it's an opinion and when it's a discussion. I think everything is really morphing into something that's much more nuanced, much more muddy. So I think it is difficult for the general public to know when people are in the media are endorsing or not, because those lines are not clear anymore. And then I think it's both on the Republican and Democrat side. They're all playing the same political game. They're using different strategies at different times in order to forward their agendas. And we see the same tactics happening on both sides. It just depends where we land, where our values and political beliefs are. So we're constantly seeing them pulling out strategies that are going to help them. And it's become increasingly difficult because of the outsized role, in my two cents, that the media plays in it all, to really parse that out with any critical analysis in an effective way, to get a clear answer about anything and to really understand what is the truth, quote unquote. It's become increasingly difficult to figure that out in today's world.
We'll take a break there. When we come back, we'll talk about the president's speech last night to the nation. And we... I'm going to start with Judy because I'm curious, quite frankly. We'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. Well, we're having a high old time in here, aren't we?
We're laughing like Kamala Harris.
Pamela at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Welcome to the program. Very nice to have you with us. We have a lot of excitement today. Judy Patrick, Teresa Bourgeois, and Kristen Van Genhoven, and we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. President Biden looked to define his legacy in an address explaining his campaign exit last night, several days after, it was Sunday that the announcement was made that he was leaving, and it was Wednesday night in which he spoke to the nation. In that period of time, a lot has happened, especially with the Kamala Harris campaign for president, and we'll talk a little bit about that later on, too, of what those 48 hours post-announcement were like in that campaign. Some, I think, good reporting on that. Meanwhile, even with the spotlight now on Vice President Harris as Democrats' likely presidential nominee, President Biden sought to show how he'll be engaged until his term ends, delivering a somber, reflective address from the Oval Office, flanked by family. We should note, I believe they said there were 41 people in the room in the Oval Office. I think they violated fire code, but we don't want to get into that. Anyway, they were extolling democracy and decrying Biden was extolling democracy, decrying dictators during his first remarks to the nation since his monumental decision to end both his reelection campaign and political career. The defense of democracy, which is at stake, is more important than any title, Biden said in remarks that were designed to have the gravitas of a presidential farewell speech. I draw strength and find joy in working for the American people, but the sacred task of perfecting our union is not about me. It's about you, your families, your future. It's about we, the people. With less than 6 months left in his presidency, Biden used the primetime address to defend his record, define his legacy, and describe his vision for the rest of his term. He repeatedly called on Americans to take up the mantle of safeguarding the nation's principles, asserting that as he prepares to exit public life, he was passing the baton to the public. Judy Patrick.
So it was a historic speech, delivered very well. I thought to myself at first, where's this guy been? He looked rested. He looked well. He looked clear-eyed. And the speech was full of the principles of democracy and service and leadership that had defined Joe Biden's legacy. But this speech was billed as he was going to explain to us why he was not going to run for re-election, and I didn't get that from it, and I was hoping for it.
Were you waiting for the line? Like, the line is, I'm leaving office, or I have suspended my campaign. Like, the definitive line.
Right. And I congratulate him. There was no bitterness, but there wasn't a sense of significant self-reflection on his part, I thought. To be honest, I really shouldn't have expected it. I mean, LBJ, when he left, when he made his announcement, he said he was doing it to devote his time to the presidency, to filling out his term. And he didn't really admit that it was because the polls were so terribly falling against him. You know, I can kind of understand it. If only they hadn't billed it as, I'm going to tell you why I'm doing this in this primetime address. That was missing for me.
All right, Kristen.
I think I'm probably like I
Teresa's
usually do.
Teresa's reloading.
No, exactly.
Because I talked too much. I wanted to create some space.
I think I usually do on this show, I sort of found myself in the middle, right? It's like I've always really liked Joe Biden. He has an extraordinary legacy. He had a very difficult needle to thread last night, right? My big question was, how many people actually watched it? And I think he realizes that less people are going to watch it than people that are going to watch clips of it, or it's how it's going to be reported on. So he didn't have to think about, like, in my view, you know, sort of the what he was going to say in the actual speech, he had to sort of craft it based on how it was going to be received by the public and what were the seeds that he wanted to make sure were going to be reported on or the clips that were going to be shared. And in that way, I think he highlighted really important things that had to be done. And I agree that we saw signs of, quote unquote, the old Joe. I mean, he's such a nice man. He's the kind of person that we want to be leading this country in terms of the humility and the kindness and the authenticity and the, you know, for the benefit of others and having that philosophy, which is the polar opposite of the competition. So that I really appreciated. And you could also see that, yes, it's time for him to step down. I don't think any politician... Yes, he agreed to level with us, and I saw there's a lot of, reporting this morning on, like, we didn't get that. But let's think about it from his perspective. What is he going to say? I'm stepping down because I know I'm going to lose. I'm stepping down because my health is declining. This was a no-win situation for him in terms of how direct he could be in this moment. And he still has 6 months where his expertise and his wisdom and his experience can really make a massive difference to this country, especially in foreign policy. So he really had to set the table for us to be reminded of the successes of his entire career, but particularly his 4 years, which are impressive. The first gun safety law, the climate change work he's been doing, the tons of things, right, that he reiterated that he's been doing. I really appreciated all the ways that he reiterated no violence, the right to choose, the right to vote, and reminding us that it is a choice about our future. This was an oval address to the American people. This was not a campaign speech. I personally think he rode the line well in terms of he couldn't, in my view, I'm sure readers will disagree, be more direct about his support for Kamala. He had to be speaking as the president of all people. And I personally think that he did the best that he could in a very difficult situation and showed us why he has had this long career, why he's been our president. And it was also clear to me, just by seeing the speech, why it was time to step down.
That line toward the end where he is speaking about nowhere on earth could a kid with a stutter from Scranton, Pennsylvania become president of the United States. It was very much about the honor of the office, of his personal journey, if you will. And I thought that was very moving and a very fitting farewell. He's not leaving for till January, but a fitting farewell to the campaign and to his running as a candidate. And that seemed very proper. And I thought at times quite beautiful in the language that he used. Teresa.
Yeah, I thought it was a beautifully crafted speech. In fact, I went back and looked at the written version of it, and it really, he's exiting the way he entered. And remember that he was motivated to get in 2020 because of the tiki torches, right? And the people marching in Charlottesville, Virginia, chanting, "The Jews shall not replace us," marching through Charlottesville carrying tiki torches. And I thought, how interesting, and he's leaving, passing the torch of a different type, right? And I thought there's some poetry there. But I thought that it was beautifully crafted and that, in fact, he did. He was very explicit about why he was leaving, because he fundamentally believes in our democracy and the tenets of our democracy and our republic and our Constitution. And he feels that that is at risk with Donald Trump. The possibility of Donald Trump coming back into the presidency, though he never mentioned his name, and that he feels that the best way now, although he felt he could win, he felt the best thing to do at this moment in history is to pass that torch to the next generation to work to secure our democracy. And if you step back and take a pretty high view of a bigger perspective of this, the United States is not unique but quite different in the way we transfer power. And the peaceful transfer of power is fundamental to our democracy. And the fact that someone would give up that power in the way that he did is really a remarkable thing, that we're caught up in the fray and the frazzle of it right now. But if you step back and think about how amazing it is that a person who is really the most powerful person in the world was willing to give up that power for the sake of strengthening our democracy is a rather, it's a rather remarkable thing that happened. And I frankly thought that he did it in an eloquent way and told why. Why? Why is he doing it? Why is he leaving? Because he feels that our democracy is at risk, and he wants to, and it's not to be saved by any one person. It's the system that needs to be saved. And I thought it was also he gave all of us the charge. Who did he say is going to save it? He didn't say Kamala Harris is going to save it. He said, you, the people, need to save it. You, the people. That's our charge. Are we going to do it or not? It's up to us.
I really appreciate everything you just shared. And you really got me thinking about the greater metaphor of how, as a society, when we're thinking about what the country is going to be in the next chapter of this country, and how this is really a referendum between going back to the past and a system that did not have equitable representation of the people, or are we going into the future where there is going to be a more equitable representation of the people? That does come with the need for people who have power to step back. And we have witnessed how difficult that is to do. You know, it has taken him a while to come to this point. But when you look at this as a metaphor of the greater society's need to take a look at who has power and the struggle that they have in letting that go, he has once again modeled for us what the right thing is to do in order to move this country in the direction that it needs to go, in order to be the country that it was, the foundations that it was built upon and the hope and the promise of what this country could be. He has given us a model for that. And I'm curious if history will show that as a really powerful thing that he has done as a model for all the rest of us to understand what it looks like and how difficult it is to give up that power and make room for that, and where the expertise that he now has, how that can serve the next chapter.
David writes to us and says, Biden's selfless act for the preservation of our democracy and the voluntary relinquishing of power may very well lead to, and one hopes history will view, on par with that of George Washington. We'll pause there. We'll take a break. We'll welcome your letters as well. panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'd love to hear from you. We will be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. And we welcome you, panel at WAMC.org. Anything you would like to add, Judy?
Well, I'm trying not to be negative, but
how's that working?
You could be negative. No negativity.
You know, Joe Biden is being commended for being selfless and giving up power, but my position would be it would have been truly selfless if he had given Kamala a better opportunity to build up her resume while she was vice president these last 3 years. I thought that she played too much of a secondary role, and she's having to pay for the price for that now. But also, if he had decided not to run, then the field would have opened up, and we would have seen if there were other Democratic candidates who would be interested in running. They were discouraged from running because, I mean, he is the incumbent. It looked like maybe he could do this, but it was clear for the last 9 months that the poll numbers were not moving, that we all thought, why can't anybody gain traction against Donald Trump? Because he has so many liabilities. But still, Biden insisted on staying in the race. And then it wasn't until the very last minute when he has Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Hakeem Jeffries knocking at his door saying, we're going to lose everything unless you abandon ship. That's when he decided to stop. He was going to lose this election. Let's be clear. He's leaving. He's been a good president. He had a great speech.
Let me just read this letter from Bernie, and then I'll let you respond, Teresa.
Not Bernie Sanders.
Nope. Different one.
Okay.
The reason that But by the way, did anyone see him on TV last night? Of like, I'm going to work for her and I believe in her, but I'm not going to endorse her.
That's what I think. It's the whining. He did it with Hillary, too. Okay. He did it with Hillary, too.
Anyway,
I can't take it.
The reason Biden is leaving is not because he felt it was time, but rather because he was forced out. You make it seem as though this was the plan all along, and he's doing this out of some noble purpose or cause. A few short weeks ago, he and the people around him doubled down on him staying in. Come on, says Bernie.
Thank you for writing. Good to hear from you. No, I'm serious.
Well, I know you're serious.
You know, Joe's got a future on stage. Wasn't that a good reading?
That was a good time.
I like doing
that.
Like, that's
he
what
missed
gets
his
me
calling.
In,
where's that Bronx
me,
accent? Or
it's
whatever,
all theater.
I think
it's all theater.
What gets me in trouble when I do that of reading the letters. But go ahead.
I think that, and this sort of weaves into the point that Judy was making, and let me just say, stepping back, I think a historic thing has happened in the last few days, and that's what I'd rather be talking about, the 38,000 people, I'll get to the answer in a minute, but 38,000 people in the last 3 days have registered to vote, 80%+ of them are young people. 40,000 people, women, black women, got on a phone call the other night, and then they probably another 90,000 because they were in groups. Another 40,000 black men got on a phone call. There's another one tonight with Indian Americans and Indo Pacific Americans
and white women coming together.
White women
too.
Together, and they're $128 million raised in low dollar donations. So there's something happening in the country right now that's incredibly powerful that I didn't anticipate it, this groundswell. And I think that that's something we really, I don't want to lose sight of that because there's an incredible energy, which is what we've been looking for. And if you compare, there were three speeches last night. There was President Biden's from the White House, which I dare say was very presidential and one for the history books. There was Vice President Harris giving a speech about reminding us what's at stake, but looking to the future and where she wants to take us, but where we can all go together. And then there was Donald Trump, who is his main thesis was that people said, you know, I was going to change and I was going to be nice, but I don't want to be nice. Is that okay? And there were cheers about not being nice. And then he proceeded to talk about what he called Lion Harris. Well, I read that as not L-Y-I-N-G, which he spelled it out for us, but Lion, L-I-O-N. And I looked up in different cultures what is Lion, and it's a strong, stable, courageous person. So I'm going with, every time he says Lion, I'm going with L-I-O-N. He's saying that she's strong, stable. But in any case, I do think that we have to understand there's an incredible thing right now that almost never happens that has, I think, shocked the pundits, and we need to give some attention to that. But as for the timing of President Biden stepping out, I mean, anybody could have stepped into the primaries in the last cycle. But if you have a person who's running, who's an incumbent, who has an extraordinary legislative record, you know, no one wanted to run against that record and against him. They had a choice. Just like, you know, there was some talk on the show earlier this week about how this transition has not been a competition, it's been a coronation. Well, anybody could have stepped in. Anybody still can until next week. The Rules Committee allowed it. But no one wants to go up against her record, right? There's no one who's stepping into the breach to against her record. And I think that President Biden stepped out when he said it last night. He basically was saying that he realized that the most important thing was to protect our democracy and that he felt that he needed to pass the baton to do that.
I would investigate no one wants to go up against her record or, you know, people, yes, on paper, people can add their name into the race. I also think that there's an enormous amount of machinations and phone calls and meetings and various things happening behind the scenes that we might get glimpses about from different sources. But everyone is trying to coalesce around a united message. So I'm sure there are lots of conversations in different families from different candidates who, or potential candidates who are like, is it better for the future of our country and for what our party, for this greater vision of moving our party forward with this united front around democracy and making sure the country is represented by people who look like the country? Is it a more positive choice for me to throw my hat in the ring, or is it a more positive choice for me to like toe the party line and get behind the greater party? So I don't think people are saying I want to throw my hat in the ring because I want to challenge her record. They're trying to figure out, they're also putting the country ahead of their personal choices and trying to work as a party to figure out the right choice. So I think the amount of political machinations going on just in the party behind the scenes, we're only seeing a tiny piece of it. We're only hearing about from the different news sources what they're choosing to put out or what some investigative reporters might be able to find out. There is an enormous, we're seeing the tip of the iceberg, right? There is an enormous amount of everything that's happening under the iceberg that the general public has no clue about. And what I feel that we're seeing is a party trying to unite and trying to be like, we have a short time. We want to take advantage of the swell and we want to get people to November to make that checkbox next to our candidate. And leading up to this decision, as you mentioned during the break, a lot of stuff had to happen before he could make the official announcement to go. You know, we're going to talk about how impressive it was that Kamala Harris made 100 calls. Do we think they just created that list that morning? I mean, this has been in the works. So I think we all need to remind ourselves just how many strategies and conversations and all of that that's happening that we have no clue about.
We said in this three weeks, and Teresa has been on this since the beginning, since the debate. But, you know, I do think the 3 weeks in history will look a blip more than, you know, we won't remember the agonizing that was
even the
that
9
took place
months
of the day, yeah, the day to day of it.
And that's,
go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was trying to say in the last 3 weeks, is that you just, yes, it was painful, but there's a lot of stuff, as you're saying, that had to go on in the background. In the background had to go on to get to this point, and that you didn't, first of all, you didn't want to announce it in the midst of NATO. You didn't want to announce it in the midst of their convention. It was brilliant to do it after their convention. But there was a lot of polling that needed to happen to have a sense of where the strengths and weaknesses were. So I'm sure they did a lot of that.
I'm going to be clear on this. I'm not saying this that I agree with this. However, the rebuttal to that, and we see it in the letters, is that yes, but that 3 weeks, just as you're describing, if they're working through all of that, but those are also machinations that were not democratic because they were done in the shadows.
Well, it's any of the other, anybody else who wanted to run, any other potential candidate could have been doing the same thing that the vice president was presumably doing, right? And then, you know, she's the one that on the day he announced made the reportedly 200 phone calls to delegates, right? And then the next
I think it's
day,
100.
However many, because I thought, how can you? But she, you know, she was just, no, I thought it was, whatever. She called.
Group calls. They were all in one diner. And all
no, but she called. She lined up all 50 state party chairs.
Right.
Right? That's a demonstration of leadership. Collaboration, that's politics. That's can you line up the people? Can you line up the money? Do you have the message? You know, do you have the, can you bring it all together and get people behind you?
But that is the, and again, I'm not endorsing this, I'm just saying, but that is the, that's the comment that we're getting people saying, but that's the liberal elites of the party pushing out their candidate.
Well, $128 million in low-dollar donations is not the liberal elites.
I think both are true, Joe.
Right.
I don't think it's a.
I didn't say it. I'm just.
Yeah. Well, I am saying, I am endorsing the fact that I think both are true, right? I think that there is some truth to it not going according to the democratic system as it needs to be.
It is.
I think that there's machinations
going
on.
We've wanted unity. We've got it. She pulled it all together.
Here's the thing that bothers me about it when people say that the votes, that he received 14 million votes in the primary. So did she.
Yes, thank you.
So did she. She, as vice president... But the point is the president, if the president is unable or steps aside, then she is the president. So I wish that 100%. Were said more often, that the 14 million votes that
do you endorse that
we
Joe?
Receive, that I do endorse, Chris. Thank you. Let's take a break. David Gastina is waiting to give us the news. We will go to him. We will take a break. We will be back with more right after this. We have a lot of letters, and I want to get to as many as possible. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Kate writes, I am writing to push back on the assertion that it was the party elites that, quote, pushed out Joe Biden. Every Democrat that I know, anecdotally, called the representative the morning after the debate. It was all anyone was talking about. I also called Jamie Harrison, Governor Whitmer, and the White House. Joe stepping down came about because he listened to us. We, the people, thank you, says Kate. Then we go to Elizabeth. As always, appreciate the discussions. Just wanted to point out whether intentionally strategic or happenstance, it is to the Dems' advantage President Biden has hung in there to this point. He drew down money spent with Republicans focused on him, and it created a momentum that would not likely exist in July 2024 for a new Democratic candidate if that new candidate had begun campaigning 6 months ago. Then we go to...
And I dare say we have a different vice president on the Republican side than we might have otherwise.
We go to Dee, who says... The discussion that revolves around the ascension of VP Harris to the preemptive Democratic candidate for president and President Biden's thought process about leaving the race for the presidency is a waste of time and energy and gives air for the Trump campaign to jump on your reservations. President Biden gave a great speech after a great 3.5 years of his presidency. Your conversations are ignoring Project 25 and the Republican disastrous and anti-American platform. I think we have talked about that a lot, and we will continue to, of course, but I don't, you know, we don't bring it up every day. Let's see. Dear panel, Biden looked exhausted last night. My wish for him is to enjoy his later years. We don't know how many are left, and he should be able to enjoy with his family. At first, I was not happy about the last-minute switch over to Harris. Thought it should have happened a long time ago. Just a week ago, I was concerned that this was going to mean, do we have time, etc. However, some of the best exams I ever took in my life as a young person were after I procrastinated and I crammed and I crammed and I crammed. That's
that's a great example.
Good example from... All right. Go to Peter. I was angry at Biden for not dropping out sooner, but in hindsight, I know two interesting things. One, the Biden team intentionally waited to announce until after the Republican convention and Trump's VP selection. It was great strategy. Now the late Harris announcement will negate the temporary limelight and any Republican strategy from the bogus convention and the Vance nomination. Second, I believe the Biden announcement will be one of those where were you then moments. Personally, I was on Cape Cod Beach last Sunday and will hopefully remember that day as a great day in history. Now, the Democrats need to continue the fight and win the election. Then
it has been an incredible experience to be able from that 180 point, you know, foot view, be able to just see how quickly political momentum can shift around. I mean, from an intellectual perspective, it's been completely fascinating. I mean, the momentum of the Republican Party over the last few weeks with everything that was going on, from the assassination attempt and then the VP pick, and then all of a sudden, poof, we you know, pinprick in their balloon and all the air comes out of it with this announcement. And now there's momentum on the other side. And it just shows how quickly the wind can shift.
Right. And I think it's interesting, too, that the Republicans had a very, very well orchestrated convention right up to the last speaker, who happened to be their candidate. And he went off their script, but he stayed on his own script. And I think that that shifted the tone. And then and then the Democrats made their announcement with Biden on Sunday. And what you see is that they did not get the bounce that was anticipated out of their convention at all. The Republicans did not get the bounce at all out of their convention. And I think the combination of his picking J.D. Vance, who has he went into the negatives. You know, his ratings dropped after the convention, and then followed up by the comparison of their speeches. Now the question is, it's up to we the people, and I also think Vice President Harris's speeches the last 3 days have been incredible. She's telling her resume as she's prosecuting Trump in a very short order. And then shifting to what's going on, you know, to the future, what she sees for the future, shifting to a positive message.
Back to the letters, Michael writes, y'all remember Dean Phillips? Don't feel bad if the answer is no, but I have a question. Do we owe Dean Phillips an apology? He kind of called all this.
No, he got in and
got out.
And he didn't. The public did not respond because he could not build the constituency that Biden and now Harris have built.
As always, thank you for the great discussion, says Aaron. I, for one, am not surprised how quickly the Democrats have coalesced around VP Harris. It's been clear for months now that Americans have been yearning for other options, and it was clear, like John Faso said the other day, that if President Biden were to step down, that Vice President Harris, would have to be the nominee. And as expected, we all rallied around her. Many others who are not Democrats will do the same. She will win in November because the Democrats are playing this game wisely for a change. Then we go to M, who says this is completely true that these machinations happen in our government, which gets us to a very interesting question. Given that these machinations are a thing, do we really have a democracy? Well, in the end, we have to go to the polls and vote.
And even with that, yes, we go to the polls and vote. But the popular vote, we've seen multiple times, does not necessarily align with the Electoral College.
Right. That's a thing, too. Yeah.
Right? And so that's something to unpack is, you know, will this be another situation where she wins the popular vote, but she doesn't get the Electoral College? So this is... That is where the question of, like, what sort of democracy are we really comes into play for me.
And it was interesting. John King, with his wall, which is very interesting on CNN, was showing two different routes to the Electoral College victory for Harris. And one is what they call the blue wall, you know, the Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, which is the typical route, but he was saying that for her, it might be the southern route that they take, which is Georgia,
North Carolina,
Georgia, Arizona, Nevada, and because that's where the groundswell might be more for her, and it, a lot depends on also the, not a lot, but some also depends on her VP pick, but it is interesting, but this is all part of can you put the pieces together, and it ultimately is up to the voters if they're going to get out and vote.
Diane says, dear Joe, if we, the listening public, would take a step back and hear what we sound like, one, we are obviously concerned about the country that we love, and two, we want everyone to hear our concern and pain of what is happening around us. We are angry. We are scared. All we have heard from the other side is vitriol and yelling. Some individuals believe those words and some don't. We have taken the same approach of yelling at the top of our lungs. We have audibly become that which we despise. Our better angels need to hover over us to remind us that this is not a healthy discourse for anyone. As you read the letters last evening, I pray that you were able to get some sleep last night, because even though I know how I am voting, being blasted continuously does a number on all of our nervous systems and our relationship with our families and friends. I slept pretty good last night until about 3:30, and then for some reason I was obsessed by if there were any remaining photomat stores in the country. I don't know how I went down that rabbit hole. I knew that the I know the company's long gone, but I was wondering if those actual booths still exist.
And yes or no?
Well, there are a couple around. I think there's like 14 left in the United States. None of them as a photo center, obviously. You don't need those anymore. But they're around. I think the closest to us is New Jersey. Freehold, I believe.
Well, that's a lovely letter.
Yes, very nice.
And don't you think, though, that there's been a sea change in the last few days of positivity? And I mean, we have shifted from angst, well, for Democrats, shifted from angst to positivity with this outpouring of exuberance.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, yeah.
It has to be sustained, and there's a lot of work to do, but there's been some exuberance.
Let's see. Sean says, Joe, this program and your stewardship is amazing. I always learn to reflect upon ideas and issues listening to this program. Well done. Thank you, Sean. Second, isn't it possible that the president has had this serious age-related issue occur within the last 5 months or so, and that it caught most of us by surprise? I do not believe that there was a massive cover-up. I watched intently his State of the Union, and he was fine. I also watched his speech in March, which was spontaneous and seemed to be brief, but not terrible. This happens to all of us, and the pressure of the job clearly affected his abilities in a quick fashion. He should be given all the grace he deserves. He will go down as one of the most consequential in our nation's history, in my opinion. Then we go to Jay, who says, last night Joe Biden showed more class, faith in democracy, our Constitution, and faith in the American people than any Republican could ever show. How dare the Republicans bring up this Mickey Mouse argument that Democrats have circumvented democracy by Joe Biden handing the torch to Vice President Harris. Coming from Mitch McConnell and the party of insurrection, that's total BS. The president's speech was one for the ages in the history books. That is, if we don't allow Republicans to whitewash the history books or threaten schools for teaching the truth. Joe Biden was more presidential last night than any president has been in decades. It's an obvious choice this fall. And thank you, Jay. We go to Bob. The removal of President Biden is a sign that the Democratic Party is wholly owned for corporate interest. For the past 4 years, the corporate media said Biden's mental acuity was a conspiracy theory. Not until a nationally televised debate in which his mental health decline could be not hidden did the corporate donor class decide he had to go by any means. So they showed him the door. He did not go voluntarily. Then Lori writes, Joe.
We love you, Joe. Is that what it says?
Let's face facts. You, my dear, are an influencer.
Aww. Yeah, you are.
That's what I am.
You are.
Yeah. You know what that means? Free cologne for the rest of my life. Bigot, thank you very much. Vicky,
I hope
writes,
that was an appropriate translation of the tone that the writer. It sounded accurate.
Yeah.
It sounded like it was
so.
Pretty good.
Well, that's the way I'm going to take it.
I heard it as an outpouring of love for you, Joe.
Yes.
Well, that's very nice.
well deserved.
Let's see. I think.
Should we clap? Schumer was so giddy.
I love Joe Biden regressing his. Take two. I love Joe Biden. Regarding his address last night, talk about a poetic contrast in transfer of power as compared to January 6th.
Indeed.
Tom writes, your panel has well cited the fact that the Democrats have made a mockery of the primary process. RFK was not allowed to challenge Biden. In fact, no one except that dude from Minnesota, Dean Phillips. Now that he can't win, they dismiss him. It is shameful that you support this or at least don't acknowledge that the primary voters' wishes have been usurped.
It's RFK Jr. and he can't win.
Let's see. Let's go to this from Tom. Vance is calling for women to stay home and reproduce. I don't think this will win votes, but it is in line with the back to the past agenda of MAGA. Kamala is a breath of fresh air. The orange blowhard seems done for. Wouldn't be surprised if he drops Vance as a VP.
I did like there was one comment on X where it said that J.D. Vance really gets himself into hot water when the poster child for childless cat ladies is Taylor Swift, who has yet to endorse a candidate, who is a really powerful person when she is going to endorse. So, yeah, he's definitely been making some bluffs along the way that are quickly getting course corrected, but he's making them nonetheless.
Matthew, this is a letter for you, Teresa. I think you'll enjoy this. Matt says, let me posit a political spin to this discussion. There seems to be a presumption that Harris and Biden were operating in separate universes during this whole time. Obviously, they were not. My assumption, based on Biden's 50-year political career, was that he planned on leaving and all those interviews were, unless God Almighty comes down, were for show. Waiting until after the RNC convention was brilliant, all their venom and bile was wasted. Also, to bemoan that Harris was not challenged is absurd. She was vice president, for crying out loud. Can you imagine the uproar if a woman of color with extraordinary credentials was passed over? She was elected, bold, shouty caps, to take over if need be.
Yeah, and to your point, right? All those millions of people, tens of millions of people who voted for Biden in the primary were also voting for her.
Voting for her, and all of that money was her money. I mean, I don't think that the whole last 9 months was orchestrated since the I really think that Biden felt that he does indeed have a stellar record, almost historic legislative set of accomplishments, guiding us out of the pandemic, and which, you know, it's not just Biden, it's Biden and Harris administration, right? Guiding us out of the pandemic, guiding us to a stronger economy. And as he said, we're not done yet, but globally, one of the strongest recoveries around the world was in the U.S., which he guided us through. The Inflation Reduction Act, the
gun safety,
the
law,
gun safety bill, the
climate change
bill, the
Black Woman Chips on the Supreme
Act,
Court.
It goes the litany, the work that he's done around health care and reducing the cost of prescription drugs. He and Harris have created a very strong legislative foundation. And she can now use that foundation to run on and to say that, you know, we've done a lot, we can need to do more.
I do agree that they could have done a much stronger marketing job of keeping her in the public eye during the first presidency. There was a really big chunk of time, like years, couple of years, where she was not front and center in the media. So I'm sure she was incredibly busy and doing a ton of things, but for some reason the marketing powers that be did not put her front and center, and I do think that was a missed opportunity.
But she's also getting blamed for things she wasn't assigned to do, because the Republicans had tried to brand her as the border czar. That was never, the border czar was never the charge she was given. The charge she was given was to work with our neighbors to the south to see if you could reduce the number of people leaving, what can be done, and that's long-term work. But she was never given the job of border czar.
In the first 2 minutes of Donald Trump's rally last night, he said that Kamala Harris's fingerprints, he mispronounced her name, but that's another story, that her fingerprints are all over every decision that was made in the disastrous Biden administration over the last 3.5 years.
So we're going to give her credit for strengthening NATO.
At one point you say that nothing, you know, she's done absolutely nothing, and then now she did all the bad stuff. So that's, that'll be what they have to run against.
But what does he consider bad stuff? He considers the Inflation Reduction Act with all of the clean energy provisions in it bad stuff, right?
Withdrawal from Afghanistan.
Does he consider the infrastructure bill bad stuff? Because sure, she can take the credit for that, right?
Jeff says the Supreme Court recently said that a president has absolute immunity. President Biden responded that a president has absolute responsibility to the people. This is why we vote. That from Jeff. Also, Ed says, are you familiar with the expression making virtue of necessity? That, not patriotism, defines Biden's late-date decision to step aside. True sacrifice and patriotism would have been to take himself out of the running for a second term 2 years ago to allow a full and open Democratic primary. Also, Tom writes, doesn't Biden have immunity to do whatever he wants for the next 6 months? Hey, stack the court and expand the Senate. Let's go.
You know, I would declare that Resolute Desk my personal property and take it back to Delaware with me.
Isn't it beautiful?
It is.
It is gorgeous. It is beautiful. How many times has the panel told us how Biden is on top of his game, sharp as a tack, a sympathetic stutter, et cetera? Siloed ostriches, you all are. Well, I don't remember.
I've never been called everyone, an ostrich before.
You know what? I'll say guilty because I tried. I tried. I saw.
Did you say he was? But you never said he was on top of his game.
No, I know. I said it didn't matter that he couldn't run up and down the stairs to Air Force One. That, you know, he doesn't need to do that to be president. But, and then I saw he did a really cool interview with Howard Stern. I thought that went really well. But I didn't. You know, I should have paid more attention to the fact that he wasn't out there as much as he should have been.
I believe.
But I mean, look at his NATO press.
No, you go ahead.
The NATO press conference.
It was Trump could never have done that. Look at the NATO press conference. An hour of questions, of which, I mean, even David Sanger from the New York Times, acknowledged after that he asked him a very complex question, not only because he wanted the answer, but he was testing his acuity. And what did he say? He was amazed at the depth and level of response that he gave.
I texted you the minute that happened and said, I don't want to go up against this dude on foreign policy,
right.
and to then go against David Sanger and start arguing those points. I mean, that was impressive.
Complex question with a more complex and nuanced response.
He did refer to Zelensky as Putin. Let's remember
one thing.
That's true. But what I'm saying in that moment when he was in that speech, or when he was in that answer, mm-hmm. he was full on. He knew what he was going for, and knew the stuff. And it wasn't like this is stuff. This is your knowledge. This isn't facts that he's just recalling from debate prep. At least not in my sense.
Sanger acknowledged that after.
Yes.
In an interview. And yeah, he made one mistake. He in that press conference, right? And that's what the media all focused on, the one mistake, not the hour.
It was a doozy, though.
It was a doozy. And that's the world we live in. What's going
to
happen.
Zelensky, to his credit, said, you know, it wasn't a big deal. After the fact.
Anyway, I really want to, there's just so much good going on. We don't need to look back. We need to look forward. But I I've been on this for a while. I can't stand it because Trump gets a pass on a lot of this crazy stuff he's
saying. We'll take a break and we'll be back right after this. First of all, I want to just make note of the fact and to wish a very happy birthday to the founder of this radio station, Dr. Alan Chartok, whose birthday is today, July 25th. So we welcome, or we certainly wish him a very happy, happy birthday and hope he is enjoying his day. I know he won't eat cake. I know he won't eat ice cream. But my goodness, why not?
I know. I'm so tempted to sing the Mickey Mouse birthday song, but it might not be appropriate.
Have cake a la mode. Cake a la mode today, Alan.
But with love and certainly well wishes, we wish Alan a very, very happy birthday mm-hmm. on this July 25th. I wanted to, I'm going to change the subject here, but I do want to read one more letter from Alice. And she says, "Dear panel, thank you so much. I learned so much from all of you. I noticed yesterday as I was out and about in the community that if they weren't sneezing, people were so friendly and so upbeat and so nice. It is as if the sun finally came out after a very long dark storm."
So true.
Very nice.
There's a whole new feel of what's going on now.
Okay, now. Let's get back to other stuff and other stories, and we, again, welcome you, panel, at wamc.org. So we've been talking about Kamala Harris and, of course, the campaign. There is an interesting article in the New York Times about taking command of the Democratic Party in 48 hours, and this is to the point that we were making earlier, about her working the phones, her staff working the phones, and all of this obviously didn't happen just in 48 hours. It had been going on for quite a while. But when it was over, she had quickly locked down the nomination in a well-orchestrated cascade, as one party leader put it. Her team worked the delegates, she worked the phones, and in the end, it seems as though she has the support of enough delegates to be nominated by the Democratic Party. I just thought this was interesting. President Biden had informed Ms. Harris earlier on the morning on Sunday that he was withdrawing from the race. The vice president had assembled her team so that the exact moment Mr. Biden formally quit at 1:46 p.m., 1 minute after the president had informed his own senior staff, they were ready to go.
I wonder who the first call went to.
Oh, great question.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who.
Who do you think it would have gone to? Ooh, let's have people write in. Who would they have thought those first 10?
Was it to Doug?
Who are the first 10 calls?
He's probably in the room.
Yeah, right to Doug. Yeah.
Oh, that is such
Did her phone die?
Right. I mean, I do think that, I mean, obviously a lot had been planned and so probably that list was set, right?
Mm-hmm.
The vice president in sneakers and a sweatshirt began methodically dialing Democratic power brokers. I wasn't going to let this day go by without you hearing from me, Ms. Harris said over and over as day turned to night. Teresa.
Well, I think that she both in the mechanics of putting together a coalition, you know, the dialing for support among the delegates, dialing for support among the state party chairs, who are key because many of them convened their delegations and voted, and that's why they know going into this they have the votes. I think she showed, she galvanized the support that she has been building over the years. When she's calling these people, she's calling people that know her, that she already knows, right? She knows the governors, she knows the state party chairs, she knows people throughout these states, and she has done that through a lot of hard work. And what she was doing was galvanizing support, and she did it very effectively. I don't think we can have this conversation without mentioning Speaker Nancy Pelosi, because I think when the books are written, as I wrote to Joe the other night, that I think that former Speaker Emeritus Nancy Pelosi, there's going to be a lot of ink in there about her role in all of this and sort of guiding a lot of people through this process. But I think that Harris has shown her skills. And then I think she lit a fire under a lot of people. I wanted to get a sense of what young people were thinking about this, because there's been a lot of chatter about everything on social media and how there's an exuberance on social media among young people.
Especially on TikTok.
On TikTok. And I talked last night to my niece, Renee, who was here one day. You know, she's in the South, and neonatal niece. And not one who really pays any attention to politics. So just got to get a sense of how she felt. She really
a neonatal nurse.
A neonatal nurse.
Yes, you said neonatal niece, which is also true.
Oh my goodness! See, like Biden, yeah. I mush my words together.
It's fine. I just
she is
it was
a
funny.
Neonatal critical care nurse.
And brilliant and lovely.
And just delightful.
Yes.
But unlike her aunt, she really has almost. You know, very little attention to politics. But she was taken by the fact that a woman was going to run for president. And she was, that was moving to her.
My nieces very, are very, excited too.
Very, very, very excited mm-hmm. about that. And I said, well, you know, what are you looking for? And she said that she really wants to hear about what their plans are. You know, what are they going to do to try to improve the country, because things are not going well and there's so much, you know, she didn't call it hate, but just so much negativity. And then she said, but I don't want to listen to them attacking each other. I hope that she doesn't start doing what Trump does. And she's very, very worried about Trump. But I've listened to Vogue, Teen Vogue has they do a whole thing on politics, and that's been interesting to watch, a similar thing. But you see, particularly among young people, This
you never fail to amaze me.
Teen Vogue? I love the image of Teresa reading Teen Vogue.
No, I will.
You and your Teen Vogue subscription.
No, this is my research team. I have a bunch of people who send me stuff. And a friend of mine from Wisconsin sent me Teen Vogue.
Well, you know, I remember in the 2016 election as well as the 2020 election, Vogue had it, man. They covered some really great political stuff.
They have a whole section in Teen Vogue.
Yeah,
on
so I don't mean to dismiss that because that's very, very true.
But I think this notion of 28,000 people registering to vote, that's before that has even gotten started, is just, you know, that's incredible. It's really amazing.
Within 48 hours, a New York Times article goes on, within 48 hours, Ms. Harris had functionally cleared the Democratic field of every serious rival, clinched the support of more delegates than needed to secure the party nomination, raised more than $100 million. Here's my favorite part of this. And delivered a crisper message against former President Donald Trump than Mr. Biden had mustered in months. What did you make of this particular piece, Judy?
So I think the Democratic apparatus had it all set up. I mean, Nancy Pelosi probably gave Kamala the list of people to call. I'm not sure if she knows everybody there is to know. One of the things I heard was that Biden kept this decision very close to the vest, and even Pelosi didn't know until it was on X or Twitter, and the Harris herself, you know, I think it was a smart move not to know until it was a real thing, because I really do not think Biden decided this until that Saturday morning or even that Saturday night. It seemed like it was a well orchestrated thing, and clearly all the other potential candidates withdrew very quickly. Gavin Newsom was saying recently that he was, or within the last 24 hours, that he wasn't around to take the calls, that he was on vacation or on the beach or maybe at a fancy restaurant. I don't know where he was, but they all quickly withdrew. It could have been that they're thinking, this isn't the year a Democrat's going to win. I'm going to hold my powder or keep my powder dry until 28. But there was a clear decision by the powers to be to line all these candidates up.
The last was Gretchen Whitmer. Who was the first? It was the first one who announced. Was it Shapiro that announced it wasn't going to run? Because once they said initially in the press reports, they were saying, you know, this will be there'll be an agonizing 24 hours. And, you know, we knew by dinner time on Sunday.
Exactly.
You know, we were speculating a moment ago about the first call, but I'm sure this call had already been made. But I mean, one of the things that I think was sort of forgotten in the dust, I know we haven't talked about it on the show, but the endorsement of Bill and Hillary Clinton together.
When they received calls separately.
And made so quickly, like within moments after the president's endorsement, seemed to be very key. I mean, that started the ball rolling, too, don't you think?
Yeah, and I think the timing of the endorsements, and I assume her campaign, you know, her apparatus did that. I think the timing of the endorsements, particularly with Schumer and Jeffries waiting until all of the delegates were locked up before they endorsed, because they said it had, you know, they said it would be an open process. And for those who say it wasn't a competition, I mean, this is how a competition works. It wasn't a coronation. It was a competition. And she won the competition.
Then why hasn't Barack Obama endorsed her? Because I think that is a question that I have around, you know, he holds his record very dear. And many people have an enormous amount of respect for former President Obama. And he has not. So is that a strategic move?
They're just holding it, and it'll be they'll do a big thing around it
later.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that, but if I were in the campaigns that I've been involved in, you have some key people who you roll
like
out.
Like Taylor Swift and Barack Obama.
Well, I mean, typically,
and Beyonce.
Correct me if I'm wrong, especially with Obama, but with other presidents in the past, that the president will not usually endorse until the person has been nominated by the party. And in this case, in keeping with that, until it's official, that even because someone still, I mean, conceivably could enter now, that you don't muddy those.
Correct.
Those
and that's why Schumer and
Hakeem Jeffries,
they did not come out and give their endorsement until they were the delegates had already appropriate number of delegates, the required number of delegates that already exceeded it. And of course, the Rules Committee met, the DNC Rules Committee met, and they're going to have the virtual vote, and it'll be before December. I mean, listen to me, December. Before August 7th to meet the Ohio deadline.
We'll end on this note, but CNN reported that within the next 14 days, she will announce who her vice president choice is. So we'll leave that
for another day.
For another day. Let's say tomorrow.
And I'll be back.
And you'll be back, and I'm sure you can try. I don't think you're with us tomorrow.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you could. You got a day off, Judy. Good for you. What are you going to do? It's wonderful to see you all. Judy, thank you for being here this week. I really appreciate it, as always. Kristen, wonderful to see you.
Mm-hmm. I hope to be back soon. Now that I'm a bit more settled in my new job, I can come back more regularly.
Well, thank you very much. We look forward to it. And Teresa, we'll see you tomorrow. We'll be back after this short break.